Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End, a Watford podcast brought to you by The Athletic, and it is Adam Leventhal back again after a week off last week, back to take you through some of the key stories in and around Watford and add, hopefully, an extra dimension to the articles that you have already or could soon be reading on The Athletic, where a subscription currently is just £3.33 a month. That is a 33% discount. So if you want to get on board, go to theathletic.com/rookeryend. Now, on the agenda this week, we're going to be looking ahead to Manchester United. We're going to be talking about Watford's hotly contested goalkeeping position, focusing on the promising early performances of Nicholas Nkoulou and analysing the Watford squad in terms of peak ages. Dave and Mike are with me once again. Gents, it's great to have you on board. I wanted to ask you about your peak ages in terms of your footballing ability. Dave, I'll start with you. Are you at your peak, or are you past it, or are you still yet to reach it?
Well, I think I'm 36, just turned 36 a few weeks ago. You know, you could say that I'm ready for the knacker's yard in terms of, you know, what we're used to from footballers, but I think I was a late developer. I didn't really start playing proper 11-a-side football till I was about 27. So right. I think I'm pretty just over the peak, but I've still got a few more years left in the tank, I think.
Mike?
I can't bend down to get my shin pads in, so I think I'm probably past my... I think my peak arrived a couple of years ago, that Vicarage Road, saving a Tommy Mooney penalty in front of the Rookery End. I think there's people who have had long Watford careers who can't even claim a highlight like that. Yeah. So I'll say I peaked at, what was that, 41, 42, something like that. Yeah. I'm the Alec Chamberlain of the podcast world.
And then 10 minutes later, your Achilles popped.
peak, pop, and see you later. Yeah. That's interesting, though. That game at Vicarage Road, I played in that. Dave, you were obviously there as well. And I remember I hadn't played football for years and years and years, and I really, really felt it. But I bought some brand new boots for that game. And then as I was leaving, because it was prior to the FA Cup final, wasn't it? As I was leaving, I'd obviously put my boots on the roof. And then I drove home, thought that they were in the back of the car. I was getting a couple of weird looks from people on the way home, and I thought, oh, well, you know, fair enough, that's just me. And then I got home, and there was one boot left on the roof. And I bought the brand new boots. So somewhere in between parking at Watford on Occupation Road and my house in Southwest London, there is a really, really beautiful football boot, and it has been there for 2 years. But hey-ho. But I would say, just on my peak age, I would say, you know what? You know, people talk about being experienced and just playing a little bit better because you're a bit more worldly wise. Since then, I've been playing five-a-side pretty consistently, and I'm a far better player than I was then at Vicarage Road. And you know what? I quite like being a bit older. I think you can sort of, you, I don't know, you just feel a bit more sort of, you got a bit more nous.
Even more impressive considering you're doing it with one boot ad. Fair play.
Yeah. No, I went straight back to the shops. I bought another pair of boots. I was like, oh, God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I've just dropped about 150 quid on brand new boots. This is stupid. Anyway, let's deal with the maybe the more important discussion of peak ages, and that is the Watford squad. And Tom Warville and Mark Carey worked on a series of pieces and supplied some really interesting graphics on the peak ages of clubs within the Premier League. And each of the club writers, obviously I cover Watford, each of the club writers put a piece together and analysed their own squad. And what came through was that Watford, traditionally, they have an older team. We all know that they're usually sort of in the top three of the oldest squads ages in the Premier League ever since they came back in under the Pozzos. And at the moment, there are 11 players that are considered to be past their peak. It's quite interesting, the sort of the dynamic within the squad. There are 11 that are past their peak, and that is actually quite high. But, and taking into consideration the amount of churn that there's been over the last 12 months, there are around about 15 players that are either yet to reach their peak or at their peak or have only just past their peak. So I think that Watford's squad is actually not in a particularly bad situation at the moment. It just feels like it's in a state of flux, but it is moving in the right direction. Or have I got that wrong, do you think? Mike, what's your take on it?
It's interesting. Well, I think it's helpful to share. There's a really good graphic in that article, isn't there, which shows the ultimate peak age. And for a goalkeeper, it's 28, centre-back 27, full-back 25, midfielder 25, wide player 26, and a striker 27. And you mentioned under the Pozzos, Watford have always been in the top three in the average age. And our average age under the Pozzos has been 28. So we're above the average peak age for virtually every position apart from the goalkeeper. Now, I think there's a huge caveat there, and that is that Watford are looking to establish themselves in the Premier League again. And I think my take on it would be you can't really gamble with perhaps youth and with that youth a little bit of inexperience when you're trying to establish yourself back in the Premier League. That would be how I look at it. And it feels like perhaps the older players are quite a bit older. So Ben Foster's obviously 38, Kuchka 34, and Kulu 31. They sort of skew it quite heavily, but don't they, the average age. I think we'd like to see a little bit more youth coming through and players approaching their peak. But overall, I kind of understand why the makeup of the squad is like it is. And yes, I do appreciate, and I can hear people screaming into their earphones or at their radio, whatever they're listening on, talking about Scott and what he said over the summer about bringing through younger, hungrier players. And, you know, that's what I say as a supporter. We would like to see that. But also, I think we have to be realistic about how Watford are going to stay in the Premier League and what the plan is for them staying in the Premier League. And I think that they've looked at a little bit of experience in that regard, haven't they?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting piece. Obviously, the Tom Warville, the departed Tom Warville, has now left us to go and work for RB Leipzig. This is his parting gift. And Mark Carey, and obviously with your input as well, Adam, it's an interesting piece. And you can, I think you can take some things from looking at the ages of average ages of squads and all that. You can also, you know, as Mike, you've sort of touched on there, you can kind of pick it apart a bit. Because there is context and there are reasons why certain players are at the clubs, and sometimes it's, you know, ideally everyone would like a squad that's kind of young, hungry, peak age, right at the peak of their power sort of thing. But sometimes players hang around. Sometimes you do need experience in the building. Ben Foster obviously drags up our average massively, and so do some of those defenders. But the data that they've taken this from, just to point that out, it's based on 10 years, or 11 years rather, of Premier League data, looking at the share of minutes per age across each of the core positions. So it's, you know, this is a serious sample size. It's not just kind of picking a number out of thin air for what's the peak age for a centre-back. It's looking at the ages of the players that have played from all the teams in the last 11 years in the Premier League to sort of establish, right, when you're that age, that's the kind of age that you play most in that position. So there is something to be taken from it. And the fact that in our 5 years this is our sixth season in the Premier League in the Pozzo era, but across those 5 or 6 seasons, we have consistently been in the upper echelons of the sort of peak age, of the average age squad. We've always had experienced players we know that we haven't had any homegrown young players coming through, but we've signed a smattering of young players here and there. But it is clear to see from that trend over that five or six seasons that we do favour experience. And perhaps there are certain reasons for that. Perhaps we've wanted to bring players in and then couldn't shift them or whatever. But I think it is quite interesting just to look at the broader trend, as it were, as opposed to like picking it apart sort of player by player, because then it starts to fall down a touch.
I think that the weighting as well is interesting, and we'll look at the goalkeeping situation a little bit later on, because there's been another piece on that and we can pull that apart a little bit. But clearly the weighting of defensive and goalkeeping areas, there are more players that are considered to be past their peak. And then as you move into midfield, that's where we start to deal with the nuance of the situation a little bit, because I suppose you have to ask yourself the question, you know, the reason why we've got Moussa Sissoko and Juraj Kutska in the Watford side is because, and this is sort of out of the control of the hierarchy a little bit, okay, they could have dealt with the situations differently, accepted, but we've got those players in because we've lost two players that would have been considered to be at their peak age of you know, 26 in Will Hughes and Nathaniel Shalabar. So you then have to sort of go, okay, hang on a minute. So this peak age, yes, okay, so Shalabar and Hughes, they would be at their peak ages. But do we feel more assured with Sissoko and Kutska in the midfield for this season in particular, going back to the point that Mike was making earlier on? You know, do you feel like actually we do need a bit more nous? Would we be taking a risk more with those two players? Maybe with one of them, maybe a little bit. Shalabar, was he quite up to Premier League? We don't know. We'd maybe feel more comfortable with Hughes. So it's an interesting debate, I think. And then as you move into the attacking areas, there is a huge tranche of players that are yet to reach their peak age, which is between sort of 24 and just under 28. The likes of Ismaïla Sarr, Emmanuel Dennis, Cucho Hernandez, Kwadwo Ba, Joao Pedro. And then you've got Ashley Fletcher, who is in the peak age of 26 for a central striker, and Joshua King, who's just past it, just beyond 28. So, you know, they do seem to be in quite a good position.
But that's the one thing, Ed, where it does, you know, again, forgive me here. I'm not trying to rubbish the whole exercise, because I think there is value in it, especially if you look at the whole Premier League table, not just Watford. If you look at Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, they're three teams who are pretty much bang on peak age across positions. And, you know, they're the three best teams by a country mile. So there's probably something in it. But look at Ashley Fletcher. Yeah, he's 26, he's peak age, but it might be the peak age, but if you're not peak ability, it doesn't necessarily matter too much, does it? There is that. That's kind of, again, the other thing. You're moving into this area where, yeah, he's played a lot of football or whatever, played a certain amount of football, he's got a certain amount of experience. But there are these sort of contextual factors that we have to take into account.
I think it's all about a blend, though, isn't it? I think it's like you have to blend that sort of, because we're looking at this in a very analytical way. And as you rightly point out, Dave, it isn't a straight line between, right, your peak age, therefore you're really good, because otherwise my, you know, 28-year-old cousin would be up front for England. It just doesn't work like that. But you mentioned the midfield, and I think that's a fascinating one, because Moses Oko, I think, has been a welcome addition, really, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's been important to us so far this season. But perhaps him in there with Will Hughes, who is closer to that average age, would be a nicer blend. And it goes back to what I was saying at the start, in terms of how do we stay in the division, which is our target for this season, and how do we use that sort of these sort of stats and analytical approach to get the right blend. Because for me at the moment, it doesn't feel like we've got it quite right. Adam, as you were alluding to there, in different parts of the pitch we're closer to the sort of the target area, if you like, but it doesn't feel like that blend is completely right. And while you're talking about the strikers, I think it's a fascinating thing, age, isn't it, perception? Because it was Emmanuel Dennis' birthday this week, wasn't it, and he's turned 24, and it's at that moment that I realised he's pretty much the same age as Ismaïla Sarr, and we treat them both quite differently, don't we, in terms of their development and how close they are to their peak. So I think the overall thing is a fascinating thing to sort of take a step back and look at in terms of age and development and when they hit their peak, and to question how close Watford are to getting it right. And for me, if you overlay this as a filter, I think it's a bit skew-iff at the moment for me.
But it does bear repeating and reminding people that the results of this this piece of work from The Athletic, looking at all the 20 Premier League teams, we are by far and away at the top of the table. It's the only table we're going to be top of probably all season in terms of average distance in years from PKs for each squad in the Premier League. So that we are on average 3 years away from our peak age across the average of the squad. The next one down is West Ham United at 1.9. So we are streets ahead. You know, and the bottom of the table is Arsenal, who are 1.6 on average under their peak. They've got the youngest squad in the league. We saw all their young players a few weeks ago at the Emirates. So there are some sort of trends here to look at, and again you can read into it one way or the other, but there is something there that says we are out on our own.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I think the blend, that the weighting of it is very important. And when you look, just a final point, at those striking positions and the attacking positions where most of the time you make your money when you're selling players, that peak age metric does come into consideration when there are negotiations going on for transfers and things like that. It's a big thing. You know, you've got some clubs, they don't buy players that are over 30. So if you do have a whole load of players that are yet to reach their peak age, that is all part of the bargaining methods of agents and clubs and things like that. So in terms of the prized assets, the likes of Sarr, João Pedro, Emmanuel Dennis, like you mentioned, even the likes of Ashley Fletcher, who is still sort of in that sweet spot, or Joshua King is not yet 30, there might still be a bit of resale value. And we haven't even talked about Imran Luzi yet, Dave. You know, and I always forget about him. He hasn't played and he's still way below his peak age. So hopefully
there's hope
he can start to play and we can see what he's like. And then if need be, we can sell him for a little bit more. Right, let's deal with the game against Manchester United, because obviously, we all met up afterwards, after the Emirates, and had a couple of beers. And it was great to see you, boys, because I don't often get to do that. And it was good to see you in a pub setting. You know, obviously, there was a bit of frustration after the game and felt a little bit robbed because of the way that the goal went in and VAR and all that malarkey. But my feeling about looking ahead to Manchester United is this is a real opportunity. Yes, we're missing Kutsko. He's going to be suspended. Touch and go a little bit on Ozan Tufan. But as I understand it, he is trying to be in contention for Manchester United. So there shouldn't be too many changes. You've got Emmanuel Dennis coming back as well. Okay. There's pressure on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So it's one to sort of really go at with no fear and enjoy it, isn't it, Dave?
I don't know about enjoying it.
Well, you've changed over the week, Dave.
Yeah,
you started off hoping
Dave?
For something. Incrementally, day by day, that positivity seeping away. That's my man.
I think it's just being in your presence, Mike, even over the airwaves. But I do think we can get something out of the game for sure. But I think it will be difficult. We've got our own issues. As you've outlined there, Tufan touch and go. I'd be surprised if he makes it. Kuzma will be suspended, which I think is a loss in the midfield. United's midfield. Well, they've got a few weaknesses, but one of their weaknesses is that central midfield, relatively speaking. So that would have been interesting to get Kuzma and Sissoko sort of rattling around Fred and McTominay, if those were the two players who did indeed play in that central midfield for United. So I think that's a loss. But I think there's reasons to be optimistic for us, definitely. We were really frustrated, weren't we, at the Emirates on the last pod, straight out of the stadium. We had Kevin Friends. Card frenzy still clear in our minds, and we were very disappointed. But with some distance and perspective on that game, I think we were right to be frustrated. I think we were right to be annoyed that we didn't get a point, despite the fact that Arsenal were probably better than us on balance on the day. We could have got something based on moments in the game and our sort of grit and determination and our overall effort levels. So I think if we apply ourselves in the same way against Manchester United, there's an opportunity to get points here, because they are, and it's been well documented, not in a very good place. Yes, they've got exceptional players. They've got world-class players in almost every area of the pitch. Not every area of the pitch. Certainly going forward, they have. You know, obviously, the big one, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, whether he starts at the Vic, we'll see. But he could win the game on his own, could be done and dusted. I'm sure he's not going to be fazed about coming up against Craig Cathcart and William Chooster-Cong or whoever, or Nkulu, whoever it is. But they are structurally, they're poor. They've got issues. We've heard a little bit, if you read some of the Athletic pieces and stuff, there are little whispers starting to come out of Old Trafford that some of the players aren't happy, perhaps with Solskjaer, and they're sort of losing a bit of faith in him. Tactically, they've been all over the shop. They've had struggles against teams in the lower half of the table this season at various points. So there's plenty of things for us to cling to and say, look, we can get points here. This is not the Manchester United of old who come and sweep all before them. Yes, they could easily win 3-1, 3-0 or something on the day, but also we could beat them. The last time they were at the Vic, we beat them. So we've got to be optimistic.
Yeah, and our history in this sort of Premier League under the Pozzos against United is actually pretty good. Even when the results haven't necessarily gone our way, the performances have tended to be okay. And I think you're right, Dave, to look back at Arsenal and look at it again with a bit of distance. And I agree that we were right to be frustrated. And Man United are in a similar sort of state as Arsenal, aren't they? Obviously, man by man, they're infinitely better than Watford, but they're in a sticky state, aren't they? They don't really know, they haven't got much of an identity themselves. There's struggles with the head coach, so they're definitely there to be got at. But I'll go and get back again to my point that I've been saying about Watford all season. For us to be competitive, certainly in games like this against teams who have got the ability to take the game away from you very, very quickly, all of the players play for Watford need to be at 95, 100%. And all too often this season, they haven't been. We fluffed our lines against much, much lesser sides, and we cannot afford to keep doing that. And it means that we're on the real big stages, having really wasted our dress rehearsals, if you like. And I think it comes down to how Ranieri will have dealt with the, you know, the 4 defeats in 5, is it now for him, or 3 in 4, how he deals with that. It's been another international break, so another period without all the players at his disposal. How are they going to come back? So it's another really tricksy couple of days, isn't it, for the head coach, it's a real baptism of fire. But they just need to be organised, and the players need to step up. There can't be any half measures. We need to cut out mistakes, and they just need to be at it. If they are, we're in with a sniff, because, like I say, we just seem to have a bit of an Indian sign over Man United to some degree. But it's so hard to be confident when, especially the home form. It's just been it's been poor, lads. Really,
United are a lot better away from home.
No
than
pressure,
they are
you see.
At home as well. So it is a difficult one. And also, we can't forget about the old boy rule. We've got, in every area of the team, we've got a Manchester United old boy. We've got Foster in goal, we've got Cathcart at the back, Cleverley in midfield, and Ashley Fletcher up front. Surely one of them will score.
Bingo. Sorted. You pulled it out of the fire there,
Mate,
right at the
Ben.
End, Dave, because I was sat there listening to you two, miserable, miserable beggars, you two. I was like, oh, I came into this with a bit of positivity, thinking, you know what, let's go at them, hammer and tongs. You've got players that are maybe a little bit more confident than they were prior to the international break. Like Ismaïl Assai scored a couple of goals the other night for Senegal in a good win. He came back, you know, relatively early, so he's not come back late into this international break. Yeah. So fingers crossed it goes well. And
what about Sinisterra, Ad? Do you know much about his availability? Because I think he played for Chile, didn't he, in the week? And it'd be nice to see maybe him and Nkulu strike up a partnership.
Well, that's the thing. I think it will depend on how Ranieri sort of has judged it in terms of the players that have remained.
Ranieri's probably going to drop Cathcart now after he kept Italy at bay for Northern Ireland, isn't he? He won't be happy.
Well, that's the thing. It does depend, because the majority of that back line has been away. Cathcart was away. Sierralta was away. William Chooster-Cong has been away. But there has been only one fit centre-half that has remained, and that is Nicholas Nkulu, who we'll talk about in a moment.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
So one of the encouraging things that I saw at the Emirates was the first start for Nicholas Nkulu. And we joked the other day, do you remember on one of the podcasts? Yeah, it was after the Everton game, that Nicholas Nkulu had played. And I genuinely didn't have a clue what he'd done, because all the action was up at the other end of the pitch. But in the process of writing one of the articles that I wrote recently, which is a background piece on Nicholas Nkulu, I did watch all of the clips from the game against Everton. And he didn't really put a foot wrong in that game, but it's just he wasn't going to get the headlines because it was all about Joshua King that day. But I felt the way that he performed at the Emirates was a reminder of the player that we do have on our hands. And, you know, going back to the peak ages and all that sort of stuff, yes, he's 31, but with a bit of age, that brings experience. And this is a footballer that has been at some top clubs playing Champions League, Europa League football, competing in the upper echelons of Ligue 1 and in Serie A as well. Maybe not as high up in Serie A as he would have liked, but playing for some big clubs. And one that has been wanted by clubs like Arsenal over the years. Manchester United have been linked with him. Leeds have been linked with him. Leicester as well. But for one reason or another, that big move hasn't come about. And he came to the end of his contract with Torino, where he played under Valtemar Sarri. And he was a free agent. And his signing just went a little bit under the radar. But there was just one moment, and I mentioned it in the piece. It was in the second half, and he was under pressure. And the way that he dealt with this situation was a reminder of the sort of player that we do have on our hands that can deal with pressure situations and nervous situations. And he just managed to sort of take the ball down and just lifted the ball over, scooped the ball over Alexandre Lacazette, who was trying to tackle him, burst his way away from Emil Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka a little bit later on, and then just popped the pass off. And what I saw was really encouraging. He's a player that is comfortable in his own skin, happy on the ball, which I think at times actually unsettled Ben Foster, because Ben Foster, as we've written about before in previous articles about how Ranieri's actually trying to change the style of play, he kept on coming short, and Ben Foster was like, I thought we agreed I was just going to hoof it almost, you know. So, you know, he is a player that I hope will continue to grow and continue, even though he hasn't come in for big money and he's a little bit older and all that sort of stuff, hopefully he will be able to grow into that position and improve that back line. Because on first impressions against Everton briefly and against Arsenal on his first start, I think he has already managed to raise the levels and give a bit more confidence to those alongside him. Do you think that's fair? And also, did you learn any sort of things that were unexpected about the article that I put together?
I was really interested in the piece because I think the fact that he arrived as a free agent, sort of post-transfer window free agent, you sort of think, oh, there must be a reason why he's a free agent. Exactly. No one else wants him. He's knocking about and we've just taken a punt on somebody that we can find. But looking, and you know, to my discredit, I didn't really look into his record too much or his history until I'd read your piece. And he's got a hell of a pedigree. You know, the guy started his career at Monaco, went to Marseille, played for Lyon, Torino, decent Serie A side, 75 caps for Cameroon. You know, this is a serious player. This is not some guy who we just picked up from the dregs, really. And, you know, there would have been a reason why his contract ran down at Torino and he couldn't get a new deal. But he's turned up at Watford. And I'm really encouraged by reading from the people that you reading in your piece and the people you spoke to about his style of play, which we saw a little bit at the Emirates. Mostly it was, you know, that game was mostly about defending. There wasn't too much chance for our defenders and our team indeed to get on the ball, but it seems like he's very comfortable on the ball, will like to bring it out from the back, even take players on and really try and drive forward and start moves, which is something that none of our other centre-backs are comfortable doing. We've not seen any of them really doing any evidence that they can do that. So that's encouraging. And there was a moment for me that stood out to me, just a little moment in the second half at the Emirates when we were trying to get back into the game and trying to push on late into the game, where Arsenal, we had the ball, but Arsenal sort of pressed us a little bit. I think Arsenal cleared it and they were kind of pressing us a bit when it came back to Nkulu on the halfway line. And he looked at Ben Foster. And I think if it was any other player, whether it be Cathcart or Troost or even Serrauta, they probably would have played it back to Foster and just thought, right, okay, I'm going to play safety first, give it back to Foster and he can get us going again, lump it up the other end. He looked at Foster. He paused for a second. He thought, you know what? I'm going to turn. And he turned away from whoever it was, Lacazette or Aubameyang, whoever was pressing him at the time, said, I've got the ball. I can play. I'm going to go forward and get us going. And I like that. We need that. We haven't seen enough of that from our players this season.
Yeah, there's some great bits in it, Ad, about his character as well. I love the little line about when he was a kid, he wanted to be a policeman because he wanted to protect his city. I love that. And that sort of leads into him being a defender, isn't it, to protecting his goal line. And of course, he moved to Monaco before he's 18. And I don't think we should underestimate stuff like that. You know, big, big moves for a kid. You know, I could barely move from my bedroom to the bathroom at 18, let alone from continent to continent. And Dave mentioned the Cameroon caps. He's captained Cameroon at World Cups. And so I think that all speaks to his character. And that's, you know, talking about age and experience earlier. Well, they're all things that feed into an experienced chap, aren't they? That can only be beneficial on the field, but hopefully off it as well. And Dave just alluded to it there, that sort of footballing brain, and the what really came through from the piece in terms of listening, hearing how people describe him, smart, not physical. And I love that. I really, really love that. And I think we need a bit of that, a bit of now, someone who understands the overall game and how to use the ball, how to use the space, realizing that you don't have to be thundering into tackles to be a decent defender. And I think that, more than anything, really, my ears and eyes pricked up, and I really enjoyed sort of realizing that about him. And from what we've seen of him so far, that's absolutely true. He looks in control, doesn't he? I think that smart, not physical, is something that we can get excited about, and probably is the reason we signed him. That combined with his experience could turn out to be a really canny signing.
I'm glad to hear that, actually, because that was my sort of initial observation, just first impressions, just from when he first was announced, and you see the pictures of him at the training ground or whatever. He doesn't look very big. He doesn't look very strong and powerful. He looks quite slight. I mean, he's 6 foot as well, so you know, he's tall enough, but he's not, you know, 6'3", 6'4", sort of hulking great aerial presence. He looks quite slight and kind of not the typical centre half, but certainly if you compare it to the other three, you know, Cathcart, Troost and Sierra, they've all got a bit of bulk about them, haven't they? Whereas he doesn't. So and that initially, just instinctively for me, that was sort of a bit of a, is that a concern? Is that something we should be worried about? Is he going to be able to cut it physically? But reading the piece, it seems that that's very much a feature of his game, and he can get by without having to sort of throw his weight around as such. He's more of a graceful, you know, footballing centre half.
Yeah, and that's a couple of the people that I spoke to in the piece, one of which was from the Kaji Academy, where he actually started in Cameroon, who had previously brought through the likes of Samuel Eto'o, Eric Jemba, who played for Manchester United, and Oliver Kaji, who's actually the son of the guy who set up the academy, said that in reference to what you were saying there, Dave, is that he was always sort of cut from a different cloth to some of the more sort of common traits that he was saying he associated with African defenders, which is being big and physical and powerful. And he said he's not the strongest, tallest or fastest, but he's very clean with the ball, never too physical. He's a very smart defender with his positioning and reading of the game, which set him apart. So it'll be good for Vicarage Road.
Danny Shitu's not still around. That'd be a good partnership, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The sort of the backline version of Quinn and Phillips. Yeah, it would be it would be interesting. But yeah, if you want to read the piece, it is entitled A Stylish Defender on and Off the Field. And if you look it up online on The Athletic, there is a couple of little pictures of him and his fashion sense as well. And he's always been, as he's described in the piece by a Cameroonian journalist who I spoke to, a very cool guy, and he's into his fashion. I think that was sort of brought on a little bit more by his time in Italy, because he spent a fair amount of time in Italy. But yeah, he's stylish on the field and stylish off it as well. And hopefully Vicarage Road gets to see a stylish performance from him against Manchester United. So if you want to read that piece, of course, just a quick reminder, you can head to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And if you are a new subscriber, you can get 33% off your new subscription. And you can learn all about Nicholas Nkulu and impress your mates before the game. Right, let's kick on to goalkeepers.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Right, so let's get our teeth into the goalkeeping situation at Watford. And obviously, you know, in recent weeks, we have spoken about it in different forms with, you know, Ben Foster and his YouTube and Daniel Backman not being happy and things like that, and the way that it was dealt with and the transition from Backman to Foster and was he injured and blah, 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 blah. And I was getting a lot of questions about it. So I did a piece recently, basically entitled Watford's Goalkeeping Conundrum, just to try and deal with as many of the issues as possible. And this is basically what it boils down to. But there is a lot more detail in the piece, which obviously I would encourage you to read in full. But we know that Daniel Backman is not happy. And he is considering, as I understand it, leaving in January if things don't go to plan, because he wants to be playing for his club. And he wants to be playing for his club because he wants to keep his place in the Austria team. He's just been away on international duty, and they do still have a distant hope of making the World Cup via the Nations League. I don't know how that all works, but it does. There are still places available if all the teams that have already qualified for the World Cup through qualifying, there will be spaces available. Obviously, at the moment, Ben Foster is in goal. And as I was sort of researching the piece, it seems as if there are a couple of reasons why Backman lost his place, one of which was partially due to his injury, but also it feels as if there was a feeling that they wanted a more authoritative goalkeeper, someone with, as it was described by someone, with the X factor. And Ben Foster, you know, like him or loathe him for what he does off the field, whatever your stance is, he has been playing very well since the big hoo-ha after Liverpool. You know, in terms of his distribution, obviously at the Emirates, he then saved a penalty and pulled off another brilliant save from a header, which kept Watford, you know, in the game. And the feeling is that although there is the YouTube stuff that is going on and there have been conversations about that and his use of it and all that sort of stuff, it appears that his on-field performances have actually been unaffected. And until that seems to sort of be going the other way, I would expect him to keep his place. But then in the midst of all of that, there was the signing, which came out of nowhere, pretty much, of Okoye, who is the 22-year-old Nigerian keeper, and that's for next summer, really. And it puts a bit of an extra twist on things, because you've got a 22-year-old goalkeeper coming in next summer. You've got Ben Foster, who's out of contract in the summer and can talk to clubs in January. You've got Daniel Backman, who potentially might want to leave in January. So it is all quite up in the air and quite a lot of political situations for the hierarchy to deal with. It's, I mean, what was your sort of your reading of it, having read the piece, Mike?
First and foremost, congratulations to Ben Foster on 500 appearances. I think that's no mean
absolutely
feat at all. Fair play to him on what's been a pretty impressive career one way or the other. And I think you're right. I think one of the good things, very, very few good things about that Southampton game was his distribution. And then he stepped up again against Arsenal, effectively kept us in the game, didn't he, with his penalty save and a couple of other very, very smart saves. So he feels to me like he's at the best that Ben Foster can be at the moment. Now, whether that's good enough for Watford in the Premier League is obviously open to debate, but I think he's certainly the best that Watford have got at the moment. I'm actually a little bit disappointed with Dan Backman, and I've seen quite a few people saying, yeah, I can understand why he's grumpy, understand why he's sort of effectively flouncing around a little bit. That's fine. I'd much, much rather it was private and he was just knuckling down on the training ground, looking to impress his head coach and getting back into the side that way, rather than give interviews to various sort of outlets throughout Europe, detailing how unhappy he is and how he might want to move. I've been pretty unimpressed by that. And that, we talked about Nicholas Nkulu and his character, perhaps we've had a little glimpse into Daniel Backman's character there, prepared to do his dirty washing in public. And we do need to do a lot of dirt. We need to get through our dirty washing, actually, because we need some clean sheets, don't we? Come on!
Oh, very good. Very good. Well done.
Thanks. Cheers, lads. God, tough.
Well, no,
tough
I thought
crowd.
You were going on a tangent there. I was like, hang on a minute. This has gone a bit weird. And then I realised no, what no. you were saying. Yeah.
Basically, I was just saying let's stop conceding goals if we can. Yeah, but yeah, so right. a little insight into Backman's sort of perhaps psyche and the way he's chosen to approach things. I haven't been that impressed with that. And I understand that he will feel heightened because he had a really good summer, didn't he, with Austria. He played really well in the Euros. And all of a sudden he'll feel like, right, we've talked about peak and prime. He will feel like he's in his prime and that's perhaps been taken away from him.
He was on the bench for Austria on Monday.
Indeed.
Against Moldova. He did start against Israel on the previous Friday. So I don't know whether that was just the coach thinking, right, we're going to play both one in each game and sort of see how they're going on. But he'll definitely be thinking, you know, looking over his shoulder and thinking, I need to be in the team. Because he did impress people, I think, in the summer. I think he had a particularly good game against Italy, didn't he? And was that in the second round?
The
quarter final, yeah. You know, so that I think will have attracted some eyeballs in the summer. They are in, I can tell you, Adam, they are indeed in the World Cup playoffs via the Nations League. They've made it in. The draw is on Friday and they'll have to win two games to get there, and it will be difficult for them, but nevertheless,
I knew exactly that. Yeah,
exactly. So that will be forefront of his mind, definitely, absolutely. And as we've talked about before in previous weeks when talking about the goalkeeping situation, I think Foster's deserving of his place at the minute, and it's intriguing the situation going forward with all three of them now, and well, four of them if you count Stolberg
yeah.
as well. You say Foster's free to talk to other clubs, but he's got to surely be weighing up whether he wants to play at all. And I do wonder whether his YouTube channel sort of comes into his thoughts, just speculating here. Like, does he lose a bit of cachet from the YouTube channel if he's not a Premier League goalkeeper? Does it make it more difficult, or does it make it more easy for him to, you know, obviously he could dedicate his full time to it and he could do all sorts of things with it, and because he's got a fantastic following, a platform that he's already grown, and he can grow that even further. But I do wonder, I don't know, I just wonder in the back of my mind whether the person who's running it with him thinks, yeah, it'd be a bit better if he was actually in the Premier League as opposed to not being a footballer anymore. I don't know. But...
Or does he jump the shark completely and play for hashtag?
Yeah.
Well, you could rule it out, could you? I honestly think that is something that he'd be up for. He's all over it. He absolutely loves the whole YouTube community. He's getting them all on. He loves hashtag. I think he's playing in a charity game for them. I think in a few weeks' time, some sort of 24-hour thing, or you know they're involved in it anyway. So yeah, wouldn't surprise you at all. But I do think, to be serious, I think that signing of Okoye really sort of made me sit up. It came out of nowhere. I saw like notification on my phone, what we're pleased to announce the signing of ... I was like, hang on a minute, what's going on here? And they've spent a bit of money on him, haven't they, Ad? Is it 5 or 6 million?
Yeah, and they've basically taken on quite an expensive contract that Sparta Rotterdam felt, right, you know, we've ourselves just signed him, and now we know that there are going to be big clubs or Premier League richer clubs coming for him. So yeah, £5 million is the fee that I understand that has been paid to them. But it seems to have been done sort of relatively amicably. There was quite a lot of detail in the Rotterdam release in terms of what they said, and their sporting director was talking about it very, very honestly and openly. I quite like that, actually. So it's an exciting signing, and obviously he would have got glowing references from, you know, especially William Troostekong, who is, you know, the Nigeria captain, and others as well, Peter Atibo and Emmanuel Dennis as well, who'll be aware of his ability. So it's a big one, and you know, he has spoken about the fact that he is aiming to be, you know, number one in the Premier League or the Championship. So it will guide the likes of Foster and Backman's thinking.
He's a big one as well,
isn't
he? He's 6'6".
Yeah, proper big yeah, dominant, you know, goalkeeper. So,
yeah,
you know, that's one of the criticisms of both Backman. Even though he's really loud, as we learned, you know, during lockdown especially, he's got a booming voice, Backman. I think that one of the criticisms has been that both he and Ben Foster sometimes are a little bit shrinking violets in their own sort of 6-yard box when the balls are being whipped in. They're not really booming and dominant. So yeah, we will see what happens. And then meanwhile, Rob Elliott is just there, sort of happy-go-lucky, potentially going to be the third choice once again.
But safe pair of hands in that role, isn't he? If you'd asked me to put money on it now, next season, I think we'd have a Coy number one, Dahlberg number two, and Elliott still there. I think Foster will leave. I think I can see Foster deciding to do something else and think, time to bow out. And I think Batman might leave.
Well, you know what, Dave? You know what? I think over the last couple of weeks, and I don't know this, I've not spoken to Ben Foster at all or people around him at all. But my gut feeling is that whole hoo-ha when it blew up around Liverpool and probably having a few, talkings to behind the scenes and things like that. Actually, he probably thought, I've got a year left of being a footballer. And he's spoken about the fact that he's never really been in this situation before. And it's exciting. But at the same time, I would have thought he's probably a bit like, oh, God, well, what does happen? Do I go to America? Do I, play for another Premier League team? Who knows? Chelsea traditionally, or Manchester City traditionally, sign a really old, experienced third choice keeper to just hang around. So who knows? Who knows
Pep
where
he'll be never having any.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. I think that probably in his mind, he's thought, I'm playing under a decent head coach here in Claudio Ranieri. I'm being asked to do different things. And he has stepped up to the challenge. He has played well. He has looked focused. So, yeah, I it would be great to sort of get into his mind in terms of exactly how he is thinking right now. And I'm sure we will probably hear from him on his YouTube channel talking.
maybe the sensible option is then to try and get Foster for another year.
I think maybe
bring Okoye in gradually.
I think probably the ship has sailed. The ship has probably sailed on that. And as I understand it, I don't think there's any sort of active talks about extending. It wouldn't surprise me because we've been in that situation before. If they know that they've got a safe-ish pair of hands, they kept Gomez on for an extra year. Maybe that was a year too many. And now they've signed Okoye. I think it seems to be moving in the direction of Foster leaving. But we will see. Because if he continues to play, fantastically well and he manages to keep Watford in the Premier League, then you'd be silly to get rid of him, especially because he is fit as a fiddle. Even though he's the oldest YouTuber in town, he is still a really fit goalkeeper.
It feels to me it's an example of Watford actually being quite well organised and prepared. New guy coming in, they've invested quite heavily in him, so they obviously have high hopes for him. All the indications are that Backman wants out. All the indications are that Ben Foster is going to call it a day at the end of this season. And we mentioned him very briefly, but Pontus Dahlberg has been playing he's been called up to the full Sweden squad,
yeah,
hasn't he?
He's been on the bench.
High hopes for him. He's had his contract extended. So I think Okoye will be number one, Dahlberg number two, and Elliott in as a number three if he's required. And I think for me, it feels like it's pretty decent succession planning from Watford. And there you go. Positivity with Parkin. Enjoy it.
Well done, Mike. That's a fantastic, fantastic way to end. And interestingly, when you're talking about succession planning, we haven't even mentioned the fact that during this international period, we've had a lot of our relegation rivals actually recruiting new head coaches and new managers, the likes of Eddie Howe at Newcastle, Dean Smith, that's a weird one, going from Aston Villa in trouble to Norwich in trouble. And Aston Villa have now got Steven Gerrard. So it'll be interesting to see over the coming weeks how that changes the dynamic. But just a quick reminder, and I know I've mentioned it a couple of times before, but obviously we've been discussing these articles that are available to you on The Athletic. And if you want to subscribe, head to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you will be able to get your 33% discount on a new subscription. Thank you very much for listening today. Dave, it's been great to have you on board. Thank you.
Cheers, Ab.
And to you, Mike, as well.
Thank you very much. Just before we go, just to end on a slightly more somber note, we did find out this week, unfortunately, home and away Watford fan, a stalwart, England as well, travelled away with England. It'd be a familiar face and a friend to many people listening. Sadly, Kev Norman passed away this week. So we'd just like to extend our condolences and thoughts to all Kev's friends and family that have met him at football and so on and so forth. He was a big, big character for England and Watford, and a sad loss. So our thoughts to everyone that knew Kev. There's going to be, I think, a minute's applause at 60 minutes at the Watford game on Saturday. So obviously join in with that if you're there. And yeah, once again, our thoughts and condolences to Kev's friends and family.
Yeah. Nice words, Mike. And yeah, fingers crossed that Watford put on a performance in his memory on Saturday against Manchester United. If you're going, enjoy the game. If not, you'll be able to relive it and pick up the reaction on the next episode of From the Rookery End. The boys will see you then, and I will be back next Thursday. Take care, everyone.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.